Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Well, back here for another week of Daniel Britt and Friends, and this is an artist that that really needs no introduction. All you'd have to do is just play a clip of her voice, and I'm sure you would know her name. She has been called the most awesome voice in gospel music. That's a good credit from Billboard magazine. She's won tons of awards, Dove Awards, nominations, Grammy Awards, and listen, we have to be on our best behavior today, because we are talking to a doctor, Miss Cynthia Clawson, a.k.a. the hymn singer. Welcome.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you very much.
You do have a doctorate from a Houston school?
Well, actually, Houston Baptist University. And then in December of this last year, in 2007, I received my second honorary doctorate.
Wow.
From my university that I graduated from, Howard Payne University.
That's a cool feeling.
So I'm a two-timer now.
That's right. And listen, you have been, I don't make you feel old. I hate doing these shows because I'm afraid I'm offending the artist by making them feel old. But I just want to say you've been around a block a time or two in the industry, and you've made your mark on Christian music. That title, Hymn Singer, I mean, that was an album I think you did. But also, when you hear the voice of Cynthia Clawson, the way you communicate those old hymns is just amazing.
Good. That's good. The first album I did in the industry, I'd done a couple of albums, on my own before that, but mm-hmm. the first album I did that anybody else heard was called In the Garden,
mm-hmm.
and it was an album of just hymns, old hymns that we did in Nashville with a lot of players in Nashville, and we really did it just because there was some radio show that wanted some hymns, and a friend of mine said, let's put 12 hymns on an album, and I said, okay, let's do it, and then... I grew up in that. My dad is a Southern Baptist preacher, so mm-hmm. I grew up singing hymns constantly. And I think probably the first things I learned on the piano were What a Friend We Have in Jesus.
Oh, wow.
So, it's just a part of my life. And then I got to the point where about 1986 or, say, 87, I was with Word Records at the time, and one of them said, most people just think of you as a hymn singer. And I thought, that's a good title for an album. So I did another one.
This is Cynthia Clawson on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Oh, soul, are you weary and troubled? No light in the darkness you see. There's light for a look at the Savior, and life more abundant and free. Your eyes upon Jesus.
Cynthia Clawson on Daniel Britt and Friends. And you mentioned, Cynthia, a few minutes ago, we were talking about your dad being a pastor of Southern Baptist Church there in Texas, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
And so 3 years old, is that about the first time you were called to sing?
Yeah, I sang in his church, and then I would sing in his friend's church. You know, he had a lot of friends. My father was did not surrender to the ministry, did not become a preacher until he was almost 30 years old. And so he had not gone to college. So we went to college with Daddy. We went to seminary, two or three seminaries with Daddy, and moved around from place to place. So his friends and their churches were just another place that I could sing when I was a little, when I was younger. And, you know, really performing and singing and trying to communicate with people for a long, long time.
Yeah. I want to get into the mind of you as an artist to find out where your influences came from as a kid, a preacher's kid. Was it all church, or did you have some secular, maybe pop music playing a part?
My mother was gone from us now, but she was a piano player, and she majored in piano when she was in college, and she grew up, you know, my dad did too, like in the 30s, and they had all this sheet music from the 30s and the 40s, and then my mother, as time went by, from the 50s and the 60s. She taught music in school, and so I started learning those standard songs, Always and all those jazz standards, All of Me, Why Not Take All of Me. Mm-hmm. That's what I grew up. And then when I got to junior high and I would go to sing for school events or something, I'd pull out songs like, I saw the harbor lights, they only told me we were... And these teachers would look at me and like, where'd you get that song? And the kids were going, that's kind of pretty.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of, you know, I was just influenced by all kinds of music.
Wow.
And, you know, then I began watching TV and loved all those musical comedy shows that were on TV and...
Well, speaking of TV, I've got a couple of notes here, and I want to put it all together. I hear something about the Arthur Godfrey Talent Show, and then I hear something about the Carol Burnett Show, which was needed a replacement, I guess, for that show, and CBS. Connect those dots for me.
Well, I was in college and in the late 60s, and Arthur Godfrey still had a show on TV called the Arthur Godfrey All-American College Show. And they would take talent from colleges all over America, and we would go, and you know, you had two or three times to. It was kind of like American Idol,
yeah.
Actually, in a way, the early American Idol show. And Arthur Godfrey, you know, had been around in the showbiz for a long time, and he was such a sweet man, red haired, and you know, we kind of identified with each other real quickly. And so I won that, and because I won that talent show, you know, did all these national things. And then people like Lawrence Welk Show and things like that saw me, and they asked, you know, if I would come and be on their shows and things like that. So I began to get a little bit of a following here and there, a little recognition. And then I had a real good friend named Jeanette Cliff George, still my good friend, who's a theater person, mm-hmm. and she knew the executive producers of the CBS show of Carol Burnett.
Right.
And she recommended to him that I try out for the replacement show, because they had to do those summer replacement shows, which is where Sonny and Cher came from, and, you know, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I auditioned with him, and there were several of young people that did a musical variety show every week for about 13 weeks. It was wonderful, just mm-hmm. wonderful experience. And because Carol Burnett had always been a hero of mine, because
yeah.
She was originally from San Antonio, Texas, and she had red hair, and she was funny, and so that was all that, and that was in the early 70s, and then somebody heard me and said, why don't you come make this album of hymns?
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and then here I am all these years later.
Now, during the television stint there on CBS, that led to Burl Redd, who led to your husband, right?
Yes. My friend Burl Redd, who was the one who produced that album of hymns,
yeah.
His good friend was Reagan Courtney, and they had written a musical for the Southern Baptist publishing house called Celebrate Life.
Yeah.
And Reagan was an actor in New York, and he had written some things and done some plays and things like that. And so Burroughs said, "Why don't you come and help me write this musical?" And that was in the early days of even Christian church musicals. You know, that was right. They were one of the people in the early days,
yeah.
The old timers. Yeah. So Burroughs asked me to come and sing on the album for Celebrate Life,
mm-hmm.
a couple of solos, and then I met Reagan. And I met him in July, on July the 5th, and we saw each other 10 days between that and January 28th,
mm-hmm.
and we got married on January 28th.
Wow. And Celebrate Life, let's see, that was...
Celebrate Life was recorded in 72.
72. Okay. Would Alleluia, what year did that come out? That was one of the big
that
ones.
That was about 75 or 6, wow. I think.
Now Burl Red, he did a lot of arranging and producing, and I think I've heard some of his choir work where he's had choirs through the years.
And then he began to produce albums. He produced my first four or five albums I did. He produced
great.
Them. And he's really a wonderful, wonderful musician. And now, and he's lived in New York all these years, raised in Arkansas in Little Rock, played the organ at Emmanuel Baptist Church, and moved to New York, and he's now at work investing in Broadway shows and you know, all kinds of things. But
wow.
He's still involved in Christian music, and he still works with choirs, and he's just a
wow.
great friend.
You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Our guest today is Cynthia Clawson. Hey, we'll talk to her about her Texas roots coming up.
My prayer, dear Lord, each day to help me do the best I can. from Texas. You have a good hand.
You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends with Cynthia Clawson today. Cynthia, it's a delight to have you on the show. You've got a great personality, and I mean, talent, duh, but personality, you don't always get that when packaged, but with you, it's great. I love talking to you and hearing these stories, and I've heard you tell the story from stage before about growing up in Southern Baptist Church in Texas. You couldn't really, you know, move your legs too much, and you'd bob your head a little bit, and that was about the extent of getting excited, quote-unquote, in a song. So has Texas always been a part of your life, or were there periods where you had to relocate?
Oh, well, I am a fifth generation Texas woman.
Yeah.
My daughter is a sixth generation, so it's a real big part of my life. In fact, for Christmas, my father gave me a huge Texas flag, official Texas flag, and the flag in Texas on Christmas Day flew in my honor.
That's
over
cool.
The Capitol.
Wow. Wow, that's cool.
He works that out somehow because he knows how proud I am of Texas. But I've moved in and out of Texas. You know, moved to L.A. for a while to do television work. And then Reagan and I lived in Nashville for almost 8 years. And, in fact, our son was born in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in Kentucky, lived in New York City, lived in Arkansas. Our first year of marriage was in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, and he's from Louisiana. So we feel like we have roots everywhere. Because I moved around so much as a preacher's kid and went from church to church, and, you know, Daddy was still trying to find his path and where he wanted to locate. I moved 15 times before I was in college.
Wow.
I was in 15 different places, you know, houses and towns. And so I just kind of learned to move, and that just kind of became a part of who I was as a child. But, you know, it sort of helped me be able to travel, because I meet these people all the time who've been on the road for a couple of years. They go, oh, man, I'm so tired of this. And I think, you know, I've been doing this for most of my life, but sure, at least for about 35 years.
Wow.
40 years, maybe. I've been traveling. And it sort of helps me to be able to communicate with people real quickly.
No doubt.
Be able to kind of find a place that we can connect, which has been a wonderful help in picking songs that I'm going to sing. You know, because I want those songs to connect to people really quickly and not have to. We don't have time to spend 2, 3, 4, or 40 years connecting. We got to do it really fast.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Hey, your voice very soft, and we talked about the hymns that I guess you've kind of become known as communicating those. But vocally, is it hard to keep up singing and doing tours and concert after concert with such a soft voice? I mean, is that different than you think of having a voice you just rear back and belt out?
That loud voice? Well, see, I think that loud. I would think from that loud voice would be harder to keep up with.
Well,
you know, and it would be harder to take care of. I'm always surprised at how loud people sing. I think, how are you going to sing for such a long time?
Yeah.
Now, in Southern Gospel, they have found some way to do that. If you were to do that in another genre, you know, in opera.
Right.
Even in opera, you know, I mean, you don't sing for a long, long time. But, you know, we had Vestal and Howard and Vestal. I mean, Vestal sang at that pitch, at that intensity, for so long.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is about Southern Gospel and how they've found that place in their voice they can do that. I still can't sing that loud for very long. I have to keep coloring my voice and make different sounds come out of there. Plus I get bored with one sound anyway.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, and this is no slam against other singers, but when you have the voice like you have, it just sounds so natural. You just open your mouth, and there it is. It's like you never had to work a day in your life for it. Is that true?
Well, I sing all the time.
Yeah.
I sing. Larnell Harris is a friend of mine, and we used to live in Louisville at the same time. And you know, we talked about that before. He said he just hums, and he sings all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's kind of how I keep my voice sort of pliable.
Sure.
Somebody asked me the other day, I was sitting in a restaurant, and I was kind of humming. She said, do you sing all the time? And my husband said, yes, she does. I used to sing myself to sleep. And then when we first married, that wasn't going to work.
Really, yeah.
He would just lay there and listen to me, and he wouldn't go to sleep. So
This is Cynthia Clawson. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends.
What can wash away my sin?
Nothing but the blood of Jesus.
What can make me whole again?
Nothing but the blood.
Our guest today is Cynthia Clawson. We're getting to know her a bit better. We've already heard a bit about her her background growing up in the church with Pastor as a parent. Now, Cynthia, you have you and your husband, right, have grown into leadership in your church.
Yeah, we are doing that. We're in our ninth year. We're in Austin, Texas, and we're pastoring, co-pastoring a church called The Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful group of people. We came here not thinking that we were going to be the main leaders,
mm-hmm.
but after we got here, the other pastor who was here just left pretty suddenly. I don't know if we ran him off or what happened, but no, he was almost retirement age, and
yeah.
So he decided to leave, and he said, "Y'all need to decide what you're going to do."
Mm-hmm.
And we had been here like 3 months. And so I went, well, we're here. So the church voted that we stay, and we're in our ninth year now. And my husband, Reagan, is the primary leader. He preaches mostly because I'm gone a lot. I still travel so
mm-hmm.
much. And we preach together. You know, on Sunday mornings, we'll do sermons together, and he'll speak and read poetry and read scripture, and then I'll sing a song that emphasizes what he just said, or
sure.
vice versa. You know, I'll sing a song and he'll, "Oh, that reminds me." And so that's one of the fun things that is of my life. It's just a fun thing, and it's a blessing. And we've been doing that for so many years when we would concertize together. You know, we'd do that same
mm-hmm.
thing, and now we just
mm-hmm.
get to do it on Sunday mornings and help our people to know how to live in this world. This strange and wonderful world that we live in.
Hey, tell me about that part of your concerts, more than just an oral experience of listening. You brought something kind of unique to the stage in a visual way, kind of a theatrical flair you put to it. Was that something that you think was uniquely Cynthia?
Maybe. Maybe, but I think it probably came from the fact that my dad was a preacher, and his ancestors are from Spain and Ireland and Wales.
Mm.
And those are very volatile, dramatic, you know, people.
Sure.
Who love to tell stories and all that. And so, and they're pretty, and he's pretty visual when he would preach. And then I married an actor, and you know, I spent so much time doing musical theater and things like that. So I just have this feeling that if I don't use my whole body, or, you know, flail my arms or whatever, right, that people aren't going to, they may not get it.
Right.
So I just, I guess it's just sort of an intensity that's kind of sort of innate in me.
Yeah, being from a Southern Baptist background, do you ever endure any criticism for that as being kind of out of the box for Christians to do on stage?
Well, actually, being from Southern, I'd be okay in a Southern Baptist, with Southern Baptist, if I didn't move my feet.
Yeah, oh, right.
If you move your arms and everything, that's okay, but just don't move your feet. In fact, I told somebody once, I think I said in concert one time, that's the reason I flailed my arms, because I couldn't.
Yeah,
right. Move my
feet. My latest son is sinking fast. My race is nearly run. My strongest trial now is past. My triumph is begun.
Growing up, I played for the jazz band in our high school, which was called the dance band, and we played for dances. But I played for other things too. But I played the piano then, played the piano in the band. And there were several times that we played for dances at school. But in those days, people didn't dance very much. You kind of hung on the side. You talked to your friends. Every once in a while, a couple would come out and dance. But
yeah.
You really just came for the community, you know, you just came to be with other people. So my dad, we were letter of the law people.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad said, it's okay, I could play, but if somebody started dancing, I had to quit playing. So my friend who played the stand-up bass in our group was a good friend of mine, and he would stand beside me, Sammy Lang. Mm-hmm. And I'd be playing, you know, I had my head down just going to town on these jazz numbers, and if somebody started dancing, he'd say, Clausen. I'd say, oh, okay. And I would take my hands off the keyboard.
Wow.
That's how much I obeyed my father.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's really kind of odd and a little scary, but at the same time, I you know, Daddy told me I could do this if
sure.
I didn't do this.
Sure.
And so, you know, he was a Marine.
See,
so I learned discipline really early. Well, I don't know whether that was all to say.
No,
I wasn't supposed to dance, and that's how much I didn't dance. And then I got older, and I realized, hey, you know what? It's not so bad.
Right.
It's not so bad. David danced for the Lord.
There you go. This is Cynthia Clausen. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. And aside from singing, you've talked about piano, and that's obviously a big part of your life as well. And you have to refresh my memory. How much piano makes its way into concerts or onto albums?
Well, in the earlier albums, and even on all my albums, I've played some piano. I've played the piano at least on one or two tunes. And when I'm in concert, there are times when I go and it's just a concert of just me and myself, kind of mm-hmm. go be in the living room, which I really enjoy because I play the piano all the time. Before I talked to you, I'd been playing for about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I get up in the morning and start playing the piano, and that's the last thing I do before I go to bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a piano minor in college. I was telling, we had Wednesday night prayer meeting last night at church,
mm-hmm.
and I was talking to a lady at our church, and I just played the piano at her house for a Christmas party. And she said, I was just so happy that you just went over to the piano and started playing. And I said, you know, Lynn, I kind of feel like if I go to somebody's house and they don't have a piano in their house, it's kind of an empty,
Yeah.
And I just like to play. And if there's a piano in somebody's house, eventually I'll migrate over to it and start playing.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, that's where it's like on those. That's what's so wonderful about those Gaither videos.
Right.
That's what it was like at at people's homes when I grew up on Friday nights and Sunday nights. You know, after church, we'd go to somebody's house, and we'd always end up around the piano. So it's kind of like a dinner bell for me. You know, people ring the dinner bell, I go to the table, and I hope that if I play the piano, people will gather around.
Yeah, right, and they usually do, I'm sure. And I'm glad you said that, because there are so many artists who you find out just almost by accident that they play an instrument, usually the piano, and you're like, oh, I didn't realize that person played the piano, because, you know, they focus on their singing ability, and they go to the studio, and the producer says, no, we've got a studio musician who's going to play the piano. And so the artist only gets one avenue. And I wonder if you played piano, you know, how, because I play, honestly, and I can't imagine, if I had a great singing voice, just abandoning the piano to go fulfill the singing career. So I'm glad to hear that you put the two together.
Yeah, I do, especially these days right now, because I've re-released a bunch of old albums, and you know, I know all the songs, and I have them all in my head and everything. And so when I'm doing concerts, I just sit a lot of times. I'll take somebody with me occasionally, but I sit at the piano and play my old songs and, you know, talk about the journey. And, you know, it's kind of strange. I just can't even imagine being without the piano. But as you know, as a singer and a piano player, when you play the piano and you sing, you have to give a little bit on each side.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to give a little up a little piano, and you give up a little vocal. But
sure.
That's okay. I do it, you know, Sunday mornings at our church all the time.
Tell me what your, maybe aside from the hymns, we'll make it tricky, not talking about the hymns at this point, but everything non-hymn categorized, what would be some of your top songs, your favorites throughout your career?
Well, I have a friend named George Gagliardi, Italian, Gagliardi is, looks like Gagliardi is his name, George Gagliardi, and he was my friend forever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
And his songs, he was the first song, his songs were the first ones I sang that were original, that I didn't copy somebody else or had learned somebody else's song and sang it.
Yeah.
He came to me and gave me original songs before I started writing my own, you know. And still, in fact, oh, just a while ago I was playing one of his songs at the piano. His songs are some of my favorites, and they were on early albums. There was a song I did called You Have Loved Me Through It All on an album called It Was His Love, and that's just me sitting at the piano playing. And then a brand new song was a song that he wrote, a song from years ago called His Music. Was a song of his that I did. My Finest Hour was his song. And he writes in a lot of different styles. And so George Gagliardi is a... I love those songs. And then, of course, I love any songs that Reagan and I wrote together.
Sure.
Always happy about those, like The Journey. And in my later years, a song called Day Spring. A song called I Will Survive that George and Reagan and I wrote together. And then, of course, you know, anything that is on those, my Gaither album that I did called River of Memories, any of those songs, you know.
Yeah.
And the only world I knew was locked inside this room. Even so, I'd want you to know.
Fast forwarding to today, you've got a couple of kids, right?
Uh-huh. And I have a 26-year-old daughter and an almost 29-year-old son.
Wow.
And they're in a band.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own band called Brothers and Sisters.
Appropriately titled.
And they live in Austin. They live here where we live. They don't live with us, but they live in Austin. And they tour a lot, and they play a lot here in Austin. And they've just finished their second album.
Wow.
And I'm real pleased with them. It's real happy kind of music, and they're kind of throwbacks to the 60s.
Yeah.
They both just love Neil Young, Brian Wilson, all those old guys, big fans of Dylan.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and when you look at them, you think, oh my gosh, it's a 60s band.
Flashback. Hey, you recently, a few years ago, released a classics album, which I'm sure was incredible, because some of the older music not available anymore. Did you find demand for that classics album to be pretty incredible?
Uh-huh, I do. In fact, we've done, I have a little company of my own called Calla Lily, and we've done, we now have 5 classic albums.
Uh-huh.
And I think there were 10, because they got locked up in a vault somewhere for 20 years, and nobody heard about them, and nobody could play them or anything. So they were like children that we'd lost along the way, and so I think we've got 5 done now, and we have a few more to do. But because a song, I always felt like a performance is important, and the production is important, but the song, if you can stand and sing the song a cappella or sing it with just a piano, and it communicates, then it's a good song.
Yeah, yeah.
Mostly the a cappella thing. I've done 2 a cappella albums that I recorded in an old mission in San Antonio, Texas.
Wow.
And those, those are, some of them are hymns, some of the songs are hymns, some are just little brief songs that were written for the album. And those last. Those are the kind of songs. So I like those. I like doing the old ones and bringing new stuff in.
Speaking of a cappella, is that hard to do because you can't cheat? I imagine you would have a hard time going back and editing or re-singing a particular line to make it flow just the right way.
Nah. It's really, I know, because it seems like a hard process, but it's really not. It's the easiest thing I do.
Wow.
It's like singing in the shower.
Yeah.
You know, you just, it's singing, just singing. You just open your mouth and sing it out. But when you, but also, most of those things that we do in a cappella, or if we're not doing parts with them, they're just, we just sing them a couple of times and pick the, choose the best cut.
Gotcha. We're talking to Cynthia Clawson today, and by the way, you can find out more about Cynthia at her website. It's CynthiaClawson.com, right?
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, and you've got a, you're still on the road touring and seeing churches and civic halls all across the country.
Yes, constantly. I mean, just pretty much, right now this is the winter season, and it's kind of nice. I'm just doing a few things around town, and I get to stay home until the second week of February, and then I go again.
You ever get tired of traveling?
I get tired of being on the plane. It's a struggle being on the plane these days.
You know,
there's all that security, and they don't serve you as much food, and they don't seem to be as nice to you as I used to be. But you know, by the time I get there, when I get to the venue, wherever it is, or when I meet the people at the plane, it's okay. It's good, and it's what I do. You know, I just, my life will have been about being a troubadour. A troubadour.
The I guess Broadway show Smoke on the Mountain came up in some of your credits. Tell me the history that, as you know, about that, because there was a resurgence not too long ago on Smoke on the Mountain. So how old of a production is that, and at what point did you find yourself involved with that?
Oh dear. I think it was 10 or 15 years old when we did the recording and the show. And I met the man who wrote it. No, don't even ask me. I met the man who wrote it in California, and he was a friend of another friend. And that's kind of, you know, those connection things are kind of how
Think he wrote it maybe in the 80s, mid-80s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I think it was. Yeah. And then we recorded it in the 90s and did that show.
Yeah.
And then I have a friend at a theater in Houston, the After Dinner Players Theater, with Jeanette Cliff George, my friend, and they do it about every 2 years because it's just so loved by so many people.
Yeah.
And it's about a gospel singing family that travels around and so it's a very funny little play that people love and it feels like family.
At what time did you become associated with Bill and Gloria Gaither?
Well, when Reagan and I moved from New York City in 1977, we moved to Nashville, and that was just right after Alleluia had made a big splash, you know, on the scene. And somebody in Nashville said, you ought to meet this other couple. They write songs, because Reagan was the lyricist, and you know, I write the music, and vice versa with them. But he was, you need to meet this couple. And so we met them, of course, and I had already been singing He Touched Me for several years. That was just part of my repertoire. He Touched Me. And so we met them, I guess, in 77 and became friends with them. And then he did that first video in, what was that, 90 or...
Yeah,
89?
it was right around 90, I think.
Something around there. And he was talking to me in Nashville. He was then, you know, part of Star Song and all that.
Yeah.
And he told me, he said, you know, I like my video, and it's really good, and people like it, and I want to do this a lot. And he said, I'm going to go to the guys and tell them this is what I'm going to do this. And I've already told them, they got about, I think this is 92 or something, we were at a conference together. He said, I'm going to tell the guys that we're going to do these videos, and if they don't want to do them, then I'll go do them on my own.
Uh-huh.
And people at Star Song said, Bill, you know, this is just sort of a passing fancy. People aren't going to, you know, they're going to buy a few of these, but, you know, it's not going to really go.
Yeah.
Ha, 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 ha.
were you surprised to be involved? I mean, other than your friendship with the Gaithers, and to be fair to you, you did sing their songs, and you sang Christian songs, but in the strict, very strict convention style, you know, shape note singing, you really didn't fit into that box. So were you surprised to be sitting there next to some of the I guess call them the diehards of the quartet world?
I was, except that Bill and Gloria have such interest in all kinds of music, you know, and so much of the music that they wrote in their early years and things that they've written together that really have not even, maybe some of them haven't become that popular. They're very theatrical, and you know, they would do well on a Broadway stage.
Mm-hmm.
I did not grow up with that kind of music, except a few times that Daddy had a country pastorate, mm-hmm. and we would go to, of every fourth Sunday, we'd go to somebody's church and have an all day singing dinner on the ground thing.
Sure.
But I loved that music, and I thought it was so exciting and everything, but it really wasn't a part of what we as a family knew and understood and everything. So then, when I'd sit there by like J.D. Sumner, I just felt like I was sitting by a historical figure, and George and Glenn and Vestal,
yeah.
You know. Greg and I, when we first married in 1973, every Sunday morning would watch Gospel Jubilee on the TV, and I would see Vestal and Aaron Wilbur.
Yeah.
And the Florida Boys and all those, and I would watch them, but it was like they were like TV people.
Yeah.
And then I found myself sitting beside them and, you know, making music with them. And
wow.
We're all the same. We may have different ways of communicating, but yeah. Inside our hearts, and the things we go through, and we're all the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Some like a steel guitar, some like a classical piano, but we're all in this thing together.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what's cool about your music. Some people hear it, and it sounds maybe sometimes different than what they're used to listening to on the radio. But what you're saying is so good, and at the meat of what you're communicating, we all identify.
Yeah. We are we're all one big family around the piano.
Yeah.
And I think the more we gather people around the piano, the more we get people into music.
Yeah.
It sort of breaks down all those barriers. And, you know, Bill's been really wonderful about that with those videos, bringing in people from other places. And he likes to keep the music somewhat the same so that it communicates, you know, the same kind of message and everything. But he's been really good about that bringing. What I think he ought to do is he ought to do something and bring in all of us in the early contemporary Christian music.
Yeah.
He brings them in one or two at a time, but I think if he'd do some shows with just all of us, all us old-timers,
all of us
from the 70s,
yeah.
If he'd bring us in, he'd have a great show.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fun to watch.
He needs to listen to me.
We'll tell him.
Softly and tenderly Jesus is calling for you and for me. See on the portals he's waiting and watching for you and for tender.
Cynthia Clawson on Daniel, Britt, and Friends. We're coming towards the close, but you can find out more at CynthiaClawson.com. And listen, she's out touring, so check the schedule, mark it on your date book. You'll not want to miss an opportunity to be with Cynthia. What's the latest? I guess I'm asking. What's happening today with Cynthia Clawson?
Today I'm working on my new album that's going to be released hopefully by April, maybe even March. It's called Episodes, and my son produced it, and we went into the studio in 3 days and did an album, and I'm really excited about it because it has songs on it that I've wanted to sing for a long time and had never got around to doing, and songs that he loved even as a little baby boy. He listened to me sing these songs, and so he said, hey, Mom, let's do this one. So that's going to be, and then I have another album that I'm working on in February in Houston. I'm doing it with a friend of mine, and it's an album of old jazz standards.
Oh, wow.
All those songs that Mama and Daddy taught me that I sang growing up. It's really for my daddy.
Yeah.
So,
well, Cynthia,
excited about that.
Listen, it's been a delight to get to know you better and spend some time with you today. And
thank you, Daniel, very much.
And you have a good day.
Thank you, Daniel, so much.
You've been listening to Daniel, Britt, and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel, Britt, and Friends.